Chapter 38. The President stared down at the open file on his desk. His face had a bleak expression as he looked up. "They really intend to set these things off? It's not a bluff?" Jordan's face was impassive as he nodded. "They're not bluffing." "It's unthinkable." Jordan did not answer, but let the President gather his own thoughts. The man never seemed to change. He looked exactly as he did the first day Jordan was introduced to the newly elected senator from Montana. The same lean build, bright blue eyes, the same warm, outgoing personality. The incredible power never fazed him. He was polite and cordial to the White House staff and seldom missed remembering a birthday. "It's not like we've ringed their islands with an invasion fleet, for God's sake." "They've become paranoid because global opinion has suddenly come down on them," said Donald Kern. "With China and Russia embracing democracy, the Eastern Bloc countries going independent, South Africa holding free elections, and the Middle East simmering on the back burner, world focus has fallen on the Japanese for going too far too fast." Kern nodded. "Their economic aggressiveness hasn't exactly been tempered with subtlety. The more markets they conquer, the more hard-nosed they become." "But you can't blame them for creating an economic world the way they want it to be," said Jordan. "Their business ethics are not the same as ours. They see nothing immoral in exploiting commercial opportunities and taking advantage of trade weaknesses regardless of the flak. The only crime in their eyes is any attempt to prevent their systematic progress. Frankly, we were no different in our overseas trade practices after World War II. "I can't argue with you," conceded the President. "Few of our past and present business leaders will ever qualify for sainthood. Congress and the European market countries are on an anti-Japanese business kick. If they vote for trade embargoes and nationalization of Japanese corporations, Tokyo will attempt to negotiate, but Suma and his cronies are dead set on retaliation." "But to threaten nuclear death and destruction?" "They're playing for time," explained Jordan. "Their worldwide commercial thrust is only part of a broader plan. The Japanese live under terrible conditions of high density. 125 million people on a landmass the size of California, with most of it too mountainous to live on. Their unadvertised long-range goal is to export millions of their best-educated people into other countries and form colonies while maintaining loyalty and strong ties to Japan. Brazil is a case in point, and so is the United States when you consider their mass immigration into Hawaii and California. The Japanese are obsessed with survival, and unlike us, they plan decades into the future. Through economic trade, they're building a vast economic global society with Japanese traditions and culture as the hub. What even they don't realize is that Suma intends to set himself up as executive director." The President glanced at the open file again. "And he protects his criminal empire by strategically placing nuclear bombs in other nations." "We can't blame the Japanese government or the great mass of their people," Jordan qualified. "I'm firmly convinced Prime Minister Junshiro was misled and duped by Hideki Suma and his cartel of industrialists, financiers, and underworld leaders who secretly built a nuclear arsenal and expanded it into the Kaiten Project." The President opened his hands. "Perhaps I should set a meeting with Junshiro and inform him of our intelligence revelations." Jordan shook his head. "I don't recommend it just yet, sir. Not until we have a chance of cutting off the Kaiten Project at its head. When last we met, you didn't have the location of the command center. New information has put us in the neighborhood." The President looked at Jordan with renewed respect. He understood his chief intelligence gatherer, the dedication to his country, the many years of service beginning when he was still a few years shy of high school and already entered into training for the intelligence fieldwork. The President also saw the toll that years of incredible stress had taken. Jordan consumed a steady stream of Maalox tablets as if they were popcorn. "Do you know yet where the car bombs are to be placed for detonation?" Kern answered. "Yes, sir. One of our teams discovered the plan while tracking a shipment of the cars. Suma's engineers have created a diabolic and well-contrived disaster. I assume they'll be parked in densely populated areas to slaughter the largest number of American citizens possible." "Dead wrong, Mr. President. They will be strategically located for a minimal loss of life." "You've lost me." "Throughout the United States and the industrialized world," Kern briefed, "the cars will be staged in systematic grids in deserted areas, so their synchronized explosions will set off an electromagnetic pulse on the ground that rises into the atmosphere. This will create an umbrella-like chain reaction that shuts down uplinks to worldwide satellite communication systems. All radio, television, and phone networks simply cease to exist, added Jordan. Federal and local governments, military commands, police and sheriff departments, fire departments, ambulances, and all transportation will roll to a halt because they can't operate deaf. A world without communication, murmured the president. It's unimaginable. The picture gets worse, Kern continued ominously. Much worse. You know, of course, Mr. President, what happens when you wave a magnet near a computer disk or a cassette tape. They're erased. Kern nodded slowly. The electromagnetic pulse from the nuclear explosions would do the same thing. For hundreds of miles around each explosion, the memories of every computer would be totally erased. Silicon chips and transistors, the backbone of our modern computerized world, are defenseless against a pulse running through electrical and telephone circuits and aerials. Anything made of metal would carry the pulse from pipes to rails to microwave towers and steel supports inside of buildings. The president stared at Kern with unbelieving eyes. We're talking total chaos. Yes, sir. A complete national breakdown with catastrophic results that are beyond recovery. Any and every record ever programmed into a computer by banks, insurance companies, giant corporations, small businesses, hospitals, supermarkets, department stores, the list is endless, would vanish, along with all stored scientific and engineering data. Every disk, every tape, in every home and office, said Jordan. Kern kept his eyes on the president to reinforce his dire commentary. Any computer electronics that runs on memory, and that includes ignition and carburation on modern autos, operation of diesel train engines, and controls on aircraft in flight would stop functioning. The aircraft especially could suffer horrible consequences, since many would fall to the ground before their crews could take manual command. And there are also the mundane, everyday devices we take for granted, said Jordan, that would also be affected, such as microwave ovens, video cassette recorders, and security systems. Well, they are. The president picked up a pen and tapped it nervously on the desk. His face was drawn, his expression distraught. I cannot allow that curse to paralyze the American people well into the next century, he stated flatly. I have to seriously consider a strike, nuclear if necessary, on their warhead arsenal and detonation command center. I advise against it, Mr. President, said Jordan with quiet conviction, except as a last resort. The president looked at him. What's your angle, Ray? Suma's installation won't be online for another week. Let us try to devise a penetration plan to destroy it from within. If successful, it will save you enormous fallout from a hailstorm of international condemnation for what will be looked upon as an unprovoked attack on a friendly nation. The president was silent, a thoughtful look on his face. Then he said slowly, You're right. I'd be forced into making excuses no one would believe. Time is on our side as long as no one but our mate team and the three of us know what's going down, Jordan continued. Good thing, Kern muttered. If the Russians knew their landscape was littered with foreign warheads, they wouldn't hesitate to threaten a full-scale invasion of Japan. And we don't need that, the president said quietly. Nor do the innocent Japanese, who have no idea of Suma's insane threat, said Jordan, hammering in another nail. The president came to his feet, ending the briefing. 4 days, gentlemen. You have 96 hours. Jordan and Kern exchanged tight smiles. The assault on Suma had been planned before they walked into the Oval Office. All it took was a phone call to set it in motion.